Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
Mac is all grown up. Mac is all grown up today. He's going to be doing a in-person alone interview with Jason Foster.
Hey, welcome listeners.
Welcome listeners.
David starts with that news.
The training wheels are off, Mac.
I'm getting Robin Williams vibes right now when he debuted Mork and Mindy on Happy Days as a backdoor pilot and that his career took off. That's what I'm hoping. The same level of Lindsay's staring at me glassy eyed. It's like, yes, hello, someone who's not a Gen Xer. I made a Happy Days Gary Marshall reference for you. So David
That's
knows.
Right. You've completely lost me. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mork's first appearance on Earth was in Milwaukee.
Where is Happy Days located? Was it Port Washington?
Washington.
It was technically
Port Washington, Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. Mork.
Are there any landmarks you can go visit, like in Port Washington, that's like a house that looks like the house in Happy Days or something?
Oh.
Anyone know?
I think the house is like a nondescript suburban house, so I don't think it was like...
I'll find out. I have a friend coming from the East Coast to the Midwest for the first time, so, you know, maybe we'll add it to the tourism list.
To stay on the Gary Marshall tip, we do have a bronze Fonz, but we don't necessarily have like a gold Mork. Or a cobalt Mork or something like that.
So did Mork leave Milwaukee to go to wherever Mork and Mindy?
Boulder, Colorado, by the way. He went to Boulder, Colorado to room to be the roommate with Mindy, who was a music teacher. So, and again, at that time in the 80s, you know, that was kind of to have like a man and woman platonic living tower was a bit of a daring thing. Granted, it was an alien, but anyway.
This whole like Happy Days Mork and Mindy thing is basically like our podcast is essentially what you're saying, right? Like given that Milwaukee and Boulder, Colorado is basically the power centers of our podcast.
It's interesting you found. Yeah, so yeah, this is my spin-off. I'm gonna go visit my guy Dan.
I thought the Boulder thing was a joke.
It's actually
part of the show.
Yeah. Mork and Mindy is set in Boulder, Colorado.
What do you know? So this is
there's
this
a lot of our listeners are looking at Lindsay right now. Looking at Lindsay, really, you don't know Mork and Mindy, and then there's a lot of listeners that are going like, no, we've never heard of Mork and Mindy. So we've polarized our listeners right now, polarized the base.
Well, great. Anyway.
It wouldn't be another Tuesday if it wasn't us polarizing.
Anyway, welcome everyone.
Yeah. Welcome everybody. Go ahead, Lindsay. Sorry, I'm interrupting you. I'm getting excited about hosting it by myself. Look at me. I'm already sizing up the studio.
That's okay. It's time.
This is like a five-year-old getting ready for Christmas, right? Like you have to eat brunch first. Before
I'm taking
you
out all
presents.
The magazines that Lindsay likes to have for the guests in the green room to read, like Cross Stitching Monthly and, you know, classical.
It's okay.
Artist Weekly and and Highlights. All the magazines that you like.
Thanks for the backdoor roast.
I'm replacing it with like Details magazines from the 90s and, you know. New wave hits and erasures on the cover. Like those are a lot of magazines I'm putting in my virtual green room. By the way, your virtual green room out there, listener, let us know what were the magazines you'd laid out for your guests in your virtual green room. Back to you, Lindsay.
Just asking to hear about like protein powders or something, but what snacks are in your virtual green room?
I love it. I love that you asked. I would go barbells, which is one of the best, salty peanut or like a caramel bar. It's like 25 grams of protein and it tastes like
there it is.
100 grand bar. I put that snack on there and they're not even sponsoring us. Promo code imagine. Guys, if you're gonna buy that, you will get no discounts, but it'll let them know that we've got some kind of reach. What are the snacks are you serving in a virtual green room, Lindsay, when you get your own podcast back again, when you go back to having your own podcast?
I'm not sure, but probably like the organic remakes of like unhealthy treats that people might normally suggest for their green rooms, right? Like green M&Ms or something. Like the
it'd be a healthy,
you know,
version.
The like
a
like,
vegan version of green M&Ms.
The vegan M&Ms or whatever Sun Drops, I think is
Sun Drops.
What the co-op calls them or something like that.
Sun
it'd
drops.
Be that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Sun Drops.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Outpost. Be brought to you
brought
by Outpost.
Brought to you by Outpost.
A lot of Outposty things in there.
Uh-huh.
Hashtag shout out to David being on board. David's secretly smiling there because it's
gotta run David back to the
synergy conversation. Advertising.
Get synergy. Get verticality.
Let's move
verticality.
On. Let's move
Moving
on.
Moving on. Jeez.
Moving on. David, what's something interesting you heard in the news this week?
So I heard a tee up. That's a hell of a tee up there, Lindsay.
Yeah.
What a tee up. What a tee up, Lindsay. Hey, David, thanks what did you hear in the news?
Thanks for that question. You know, I've been reading. I was thumbing through, you know, my newsletters that I receive in the mail, through the Telegram, and I noticed the small mom and pop shop called Facebook is changing their name to Meta, and
they're not changing their name, David.
Well, they're
creating a holding company.
Here's the thing, right? The newsletter I got that landed in my mailbox said that they're changing the name, but I understand.
What newsletter is who's
writing? Do you remember? This is not going to be Lindsay's going to get this reference. It was printed on the print shop.
And that's right. With like clip art.
Clip art. Dot matrix printer. David gets all his news by a print shop printouts. Yeah. It's like folded into triads, and it's tucked into a screen door. It's just like in a screen door every morning. It's like, oh, the information's here.
I like this old timey like image of CEO David. Like he walks into the office every day and like Rachel has printed out like a folder of news for him.
Folder of news. He's leaving through all the it's all cut out.
Here's what you need to know today.
David, yep. What does David have a cereal box top in that press that presser? That's interesting. So there's like a fortune cookie as a cereal box top. There's a horoscope from like Marilyn Voss Samantha.
Right. So anyways, in the newsletter. The new holding company, the new Zuckerberg holding company, Meta. Yeah. What are your thoughts, guys? As we enter into the new world of the metaverse,
I'm angry. I'm angry because I love using the word Meta, and now I can't because I'm now giving brand hype to that whole thing. So that bums me out. First of all, I'm like, why do you take a word away from me? There's so many other words you could have taken from me.
But not the meme that. I think it's a stroke of marketing genius on whomever he hired to brand this company.
Okay, I'm curious.
It's on the nose. It's incredibly descriptive, and it actually says the thing that they're trying to do, which is to mine all of our metadata to own us. It's incredible.
Okay, Lindsay, tell him David's wrong. Tell us why David's wrong.
Well, in that sense, it is radically transparent.
Yes, exactly. exactly.
Credit to the Zuck on that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it just felt like watching the first minute or so of that announcement video felt like something out of Black Mirror or like Uploaded, I think is the name of the show. Like, it just felt like, yep, I hate it here. Yep, this is... This is the future.
Here's the thing. Like, you were asking me like my reactions overall, and I think from a cultural perspective, Facebook is ubiquitous. I use it, right? A lot of us use it, right? We're on it, whether we like it or not. We use it, which is interesting. Like, I could choose not to use it. I still choose to use it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything Mark Zuckerberg would have done. Like, I get why you do that move. It totally makes sense. I believe like we're all primed to hate this guy so much. It could have been the coolest thing ever. I think we're all like, I hate you anyway, right? And that's the vibe I get, right? Like, we're just all haters because of because Facebook's such a gorilla about things, right? And how they like help propagate some stuff that shouldn't be propagated because of their lax editing, moderating standards, right? Like, there's a sense of anger about it. So I think at any point, like, I just wouldn't have liked it anyway, and that's just because I have other feelings about that whole platform.
I had this like weird, like. I sort of put myself into the place of the marketing consultants that made the name, right? And of course, Meta would be the first thing that would pop into my head. And I'd be like, yeah, we can't propose that.
Too easy.
It's too easy, right?
Too easy.
It's too on the nose.
Too easy.
But of course,
they did it anyway. They did it. You got to think it was one of the first things on the flip chart. And then they like came back around. They're like, you know what? It was Meta.
It's got the most heat, right? Everybody's got all the little like buttons, the button votes,
the stickers are
right by.
You can't go with our first one, guys. That's the one everybody likes, or everybody's got either has an opinion about it. They hate it, like it. Either way, you want to have something, right? You want heat or you want something.
Yeah,
I will say as Imagine MK's resident tired marketing director. That another feature they introduced with the Meta. Rebrand or the Facebook rebrand or whatever is a work account login. So I am looking forward to exploring that so that you do not have to be logged into your personal Facebook to be managing your work account. And I hope that includes Instagram too from desktop. Because right now, your worlds are combined. You get notifications from your work accounts, you get notifications from your personal accounts, and now they're going to finally have a work login.
Zuck, if you're listening, Lindsay's just trying to tell you that she hates it when I like things as Imagine MKE when I'm not supposed to.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I can finally block David from...
You got to manage when David, likes that.
Grabs over here likes our own posts. When I'm trying to like it as me, but I'm liking it as Imagine.
I thought you were going to like all those.
That's right, Lindsay then scrolling on Facebook, seeing that we have liked our own post. I'm like, sigh. Unlike.
Yeah. That's such a Gen X boomer move to like your own things. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
Anyway,
that's the news for now, or at least that's our reactions to the news.
The only news we paid attention to this week.
Well, it was fresh. It was yesterday. It's that's fresh. Probably. Mm-hmm. But also, actually, after the banter this today, we're going to be excited to have Jason Foster, who's the president and COO of Destination Crenshaw, which is seeking to do 1.3 miles of a celebration of Black culture in Los Angeles. So placemaking, excited, even though he's not Milwaukee, I think it's an interesting example to learn from. And so we're excited to talk to him after the break. So bringing up LA, David, we know you got LA ties, correct?
Absolutely.
This is a way to tie in LA ties.
It is now
our LA ties segment, by the
LA ties segment. Yeah.
Brought to you by LA Gear, the shoes, the shoes that made a country, LA Gear.
I'm really bummed out to miss being a part of this interview with you and to have you have this moment of where you're all grown up to do this by yourself, because I would love to check in with,
I just want to note for our listeners that Mac is, I think, like 6 months older than David. So
which is really unfortunate and troubling when I found out that I was 6 months older than David. It's like, as like a sports fan, you find out like, wait, oh my God, I'm 30 years older than the athletes I'm rooting for. And I'm wearing a jersey of a boy that's 20 years younger than me. It's like, oh, that's humbling. That's what I felt like when I found out David's 6 months. I'm like, what?
Yeah, 6 months, right. That's right.
6 months. What? Anyway, go ahead, back to LA.
It would have been really nice to be able to visit with Jason. I'm excited to hear the conversations coming up. But, it was such an interesting community because it is humongous, it is diverse, and yet when you think about Los Angeles, you think about the movie industry, right? And all of the sort of creatives and creators that sort of feed into the movie industry. But yet there's an incredible music industry there. There's all this incredible visual arts, and then they have the incredible symphony hall. I mean, it is sort of this really interesting community with no real center and no real gravity to it, which I think sort of creates a lot of really interesting projects and communities sort of within that, right? And I think that is part of what makes LA so amazing, and also what's so also interesting to wrap your arm around, because there's no real civic center in the city.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting about Jason, that he's not only been working on this project, Destination Crenshaw, which is about placemaking, right? 1.3 miles of Crenshaw Avenue, but also he's worked previously. This is a way we're going to get his bio in. Isn't that neat? We're going to get his bio in right now. He was the director of strategic partnerships at River LA, which is about revitalizing communities adjacent to the 51-mile stretch of the LA River. And I'm sure talking to you, David, like the LA River is a thing, but they've helped make it a thing in terms of cleaning it up, having more activity around it. And so I think it'll be interesting to hear from our guest after the break, Jason Foster, who's currently now, again, as I said, the president and CEO of another startup, Destination Crenshaw, to talk about what does it mean to make place in a place that feels placeless at times, right? And what does that mean? Other things about Jason you ought to know. Before moving to LA, he's a New York guy. He worked as a project manager for Impact Brooklyn in Brooklyn, New York. He's also a proud Public Allies alum, which is how I got to know him and how he's stayed on my radar, and excited to bring him back on. He currently lives in South Los Angeles with his wife and two children. They're native Los Angelinos, although he's proud to have grown up in Knoxville, Tennessee. After the break, get to meet Jason Foster.
Through the fire, through the rain, our tomorrow will be a better day. 'Cause we are proud.
Thanks to the wonders of technology. So excited to have in live from Los Angeles, California, Jason Foster. Jason, welcome to the virtual recording room here at Imagine This Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
This is exciting. Do you know you're on the 201st ranked arts and culture podcast in the country? And you're going to get
really?
Us.
Really? Let's go.
You're going to get us. You're going to get us to sub 200. You're going to get us to sub 200.
We're bumping
right
to 150 right now. That's, right, that's where we're going.
That hot, hot LA market. That sweet, sweet LA market. So yeah. Hello to our new LA listeners. Welcome aboard. We won't talk too much Giannis. We won't talk too much of that. Especially I'm a Bulls fan too. So like, I'm not talking anything Bucks right now. Anyway.
Exactly. I mean, we don't want to talk baseball.
We don't know. Right, we do so, not. No, no, yeah. Not at all. Anyway, Jason Foster, so great to have you. You are the CEO and president, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of Destination Crenshaw, which has a vision of 1.6 miles of a outdoor, I'd say outdoor museum, but like a living museum to Black art, to Black culture in Los Angeles, right? That's what brings you on our call today, because here at Imagine This Podcast, Imagine MKE, we definitely believe in placemaking, right? And we definitely believe in the drive of arts and culture that could create vibrancy, not just for this notion of self-actualization, right? You see your story told and feel belong, but it actually generates, it's an engine, right?
Yes.
For economy and all these things, right? So, that being said, we got you on, but before we get into all of that, we love to ask all of our guests the same question. You're getting the standard question here, the Lindsay Sheridan question, my teammate Lindsay. She's not on the pod right now, but this is her question. Tell us a story of an arts and cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you. Could have been a book you read, could have been a performance you witnessed or performed yourself, or maybe you created. Could have been during your formative years, could have been last week. You let us know, what is something that left a strong imprint, and how is it still imprinted on you today?
Yeah, so I'll say that, you know, my most relevant kind of moment experiencing arts and culture to where I am today was when Kerry James Marshall actually had an exhibition in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And Kerry James Marshall is a Black artist from Chicago.
Okay.
And is, you know, world renowned for his pieces, primarily focused on Black art, but the Blackness of his art and the placement of it and the reasoning behind it. And I'm not an arts person. So I come at this conversation from a community development background around organizing. You know, I was in New York when, you know, Occupy Wall Street was happening. So there's a lot of there around, you know, high art and what my relationship to it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I stole at lunchtime, you know, I walked over to MoCA where his exhibition was, just from work. Everybody had been talking about it. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll check it out, whatever.
Right.
And finally went over there and, you know, and I experienced one of his paintings, which was an artist, a painting of an artist of his former self. And it is basically an artist that is being painted. He has kind of a disheveled face, but he's painting himself in that way, right? And it kind of shows how he is vulnerable. He is Black. He is painted on a Black canvas. But he's also in a white space. And for the first time, I saw a piece of art that actually depicted my life because at that time I was working in an extremely non-Black space, in a non-Black project, working for initiatives that I was passionate about, but not purposeful about, and really believed in, but I knew that I could do more for my community in which I lived in. So that really changed, honestly, the way that I go about my work, the way that I look at myself. And it was for the first time I actually started experiencing art as a visceral thing that could actually direct my feelings and my intentions and really kind of led to where I am today. Wow. So that to me, you know, I kind of owe a lot of my, you know, work now to that moment. That I had really by myself and with a lot of people watching, like, what's wrong with him? Because it was, you know, for the first time I really was affected by something or had the kind of mental space to be affected by it. So that kind of led to me to where I am today.
Isn't that something where, you know, I've known you a while, Jason, and I've had the privilege of knowing you through our previous, you know, sort of previous iteration at Public Allies and different mm-hmm. roles there, right? And mm-hmm. so I got to know you when I worked at Alum there. So I've known you a while, and I know I always admired you because you've always been about the work, right? Brooklyn,
yeah,
LA, now this. Yeah. And why, when I heard your story, I'm really struck by this notion of this person created something that so spoke to you and knew you, and you found it almost at the right time.
Oh yeah.
Right. 100%. And that's just something amazing, right? Almost hiding in plain sight in some way, right? Cause this is a piece from 1980, I think. So it's been around, right? It's not like, you know, and also, right, although you heard about it, it's not like other people in your life introduced you to this artist ahead of time. There's almost something to the, like, you had to meet it at that moment for it to hit you in the way it did. And almost, I'm imagining like almost a light refracting, like your light mm-hmm. refracted in a different angle.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in the mental space at that time to be able to accept it.
Yeah.
And there's a great book called Improbability Principle that actually gets rid of coincidences. I no longer believe in them. And I think, you know, what I do believe is that there are moments in time where when you're not fighting the wind in your life and you're actually just going with where you're supposed to go, things like this happen. And having the space and the ability to be able to accept those things and let them direct you is something that led me to Kerry James Marshall talking about infrastructure and the privilege of it and why, you know, who is the most privileged in these conversations? He's an artist talking about this, right? So like,
you're not supposed to be talking about, wait, how can you talk about this already? Like, wait a minute, you can talk about
exactly. I started finding all these videos and all these things that he was like really breaking things down because he was addressing these things in his paintings. And to a lay person like me, who was really unfamiliar, they just look like paintings. Yeah. But the stories that he were telling were really, integral to the stories that we're all having every single day. Yeah. So then that started investigating, like, wait, what are other people trying to do?
know? That's awesome. And I think what you're also highlighting, Jason, is the power of an artist to make the strange familiar and the familiar strange, right? Like you said, you're in this field, you read tons of white papers, you see lots of policies, but for that artist to tell that story in that way, it gets at you, right? It sticks with you, or it unlocks something in you, even a new insight, right? Mm-hmm. And again, that's going to land differently on everyone, different period of where they are in their own journey when they experience
it.
That being said, your life wouldn't be the same if you didn't have it, right? If you didn't have that moment, right? And it's certainly what it sounds like, definitely informs your current practice now, right?
Absolutely.
Well, before we get into it, man, that's what a great story. That's why, you know, when you said that, right, it reminds me a lot of times whenever I, there are no coincidences, right? Like our conversation today was supposed to happen. I think the last time I talked to you might've been 5 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
Might've been, right? You reached out to me like, hey man, let's talk. I'm like, yeah, let's talk, right? And now I reached out to you, right? And there's something profound about, there's a reason why we're talking today, you know, not just to make a podcast. There's something about this exchange, something about this connection that's going to be more meaningful. And I appreciate you lifting up that possibility. And it reminds me a lot of times, sometimes I'll do a presentation, right? Like a training, or I'm in front of a room for something, right? And a lot of times I'll say in this presentation, I'll go, man, what I want to have happen, my goal is for this thing to be a top five experience for you this week. Mm-hmm. And in my heart of hearts, I hope it's a top five experience in your life that we're going to have. I want it. It doesn't always happen, but it'd be so freaking cool if like you had to like, you made a stamp, you made the coin of this moment because this is when it changed for you. Like, and I put that out there as like a prayer. It's also a wish. Like I want it to be, I sometimes don't even believe it sometimes because I don't want to believe it because it makes me aware of my own power. And that scares me, all these things. Right. But it's true. These are the possibilities that could be in this moment unfolding. Right. And it's so profound that you just lifted that up for me as a reminder, because that's every conversation possibility, right? That's every engagement that we could do. That's
every organizer's mindset.
Yeah, is that right? Every one-on-one you could do.
This could be the one. This is it.
This is it.
Right?
This is it.
I think you know, this goes back to my Public Ally days, right? My Brooklyn days, where, you know, I had one conversation. I had 2 minutes before you got on the train.
This is Pratt, right? You're in Pratt area?
Yeah, I'm in Pratt Area Community Council. It's now Impact Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Affordable housing advocacy.
Yeah.
And really, you know, I had one conversation with you. I had 2 minutes before you got on the train. To really get your attention, but also to have you take this pamphlet and meet me somewhere in a week, right? Like that, that is, I think it's been one of the formative things that I've done in my life. And I always tell young people, before you make up your mind what you want to be, try to get other people to do something with you. Because I think it does change your mindset around the value of what conversations and connections can be, and then also how little we all are, right? Mm. Like how unimportant I actually am in this person's day. And I'm asking them to change their plans to do something else.
What do you do for yourself? And I got to think, now you're going into boardrooms and trying to get people to invest heavily, right? In this dream, right? This possibility.
Right.
What from that micro experience do you still carry with you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like what, cause again, that's like the reason why I'm like sitting with that, and it's hard for me because that just feels like lots of rejection all the time. Right. In terms of just like, I ain't here for this conversation. I'm doing like, what did you do for yourself? So you were able to stay in touch with humanity as opposed to putting up a wall to protect yourself when you did that. Does that resonate with you? I'm going through.
That's honestly, and I mean, we talked about the DC project. I mean, it's a cultural infrastructure project based in permanence for Black LA.
Yeah.
Right. So I think one of the things that
this is Destination Crenshaw. This is Destination Crenshaw.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've done, and I'm sure all the people that are working on this project have done, is, you know, really allowed themselves to be convinced that this is the right decision, that this is what we should be doing. And that allows us to deal with, you know, the issues in philanthropy, the lack of acknowledgement of the systemic issues that the community is going through, and the no's, right? Because that being convinced allows us to not be bothered. And also build resilience to it. And so that's the same as, you know, in Brooklyn in those days, you know, 100 no's was a day, right? I think it really, for me, it actually allowed me to get over myself in a way.
Yeah.
Where it allowed me to actually see myself as someone that was, you know, who I was, which was a person that was trying to inconvenience you to better your life, right? and whether you know it or not, right? And it is about that relationship, and it allowed me to actually go about these conversations differently. Like acknowledging that, like, yes, donuts are very important at a community meeting. And, you know, the quality of your interaction that first time sets the trajectory for everything. And that's what we use now, whether it's with our construction workers that were trying to get started in the trades, or the artists that are interested in our project. My phone number is available. My email is available because those conversations, I want people to have that personal connection with what we're trying to create.
So we mentioned this, you were at River LA for a bit, before you came on, I gave a little bit of your bio. You're at River LA, and that's where I really got to know you a little bit more, because that was another startup, right? That was 51 miles of the LA River, which again, nobody, who talks about the LA River, right? Like, you don't
people
really
in
talk
LA,
about, but they talk about it now, right? Because of that. And I got to think, right, whenever you're doing something that is so grand and that's changing the topography and changing people's relation to it, that still has pushback, because people still want things the way they are, right? They might not say it, but like, And I'm wondering, what are the challenges that you had to deal with, you know, making a place, right? In this case, an environmental place. What were the things that you had to overcome? Systems, mental models, you name it, right? That had to shift so that something new could happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So I think the river, particularly because it's 51 miles, it's 17 municipalities, it's a million people living within a mile.
Yeah.
So many different points of view, but also fundamentally different perspectives on what this resource could be.
Literally different perspectives, geographically, and all like the things right there. Yeah. They say you don't step in the same river twice. You could also say you don't see the same river twice in LA, right?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. So it allowed some freedom because there wasn't one decision. There's not one answer. And whether you were, you know, who we were at the organization, that's, we leaned into that. We tried to create as many reasons why people, and we called them doors, open as many doors to the project as possible, because that would allow people to then enter a room where they would be together. Right. And I think, again, that goes back to, you know, I just want to get you here. And I think, you know,
that's physically and mentally and emotionally, right? I need to get you here, right? I need to move
exactly,
you here, right?
Exactly. And as long as we're moving you in that direction where we're creating a resource that's better for everyone, that's a win. On the flip side of that, the challenge was, is that typically engineers don't work that way. they kind of have a point of view, you know,
like this part is actually better to do X, and I know people would love Y, but it only does X.
Yeah, so, we're not doing that, you know. So I think that, you know, what we were trying to do is try to figure out how exactly to have community led information actually change those perspectives, and to actually have human data actually inform what we were going to have in this human infrastructure project. And I think that, you know, those things don't have to be different. And so when we think about placemaking and like making these opportunities happen, we transitioned to placekeeping because we understood that some communities, they were scared of the placemaking.
Yeah.
Because of what the what the causes could actually come out of that.
Yes. Gentrification, getting pushed out, all this
cultural erasure, displacement. And how do we create more opportunities and invest in these communities where they don't have the same opportunities, right? And then creating those opportunities for the creatives that are in those communities to benefit, right? Because tangibly, people need to earn more. If their communities are going to improve, because they have to earn more to exist in these rising costs, right? And I think that that's something that we're always trying to solve. At the river, it was a macro level conversation. At Destination Crenshaw, it's a micro level. It's very particular to that community, but it is the same, right? Like,
go from 51 miles to 1.3 miles, right? Yeah. It's a nice.
How do we improve, see each other? See each other in our project and stay. All those things need to happen in order for us to revitalize community and actually really live in the equitable places that we say we want to live in.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's what we're trying to accomplish. So we need to create, you know, all those doors, and then hopefully those doors lead to somewhere outside that's free and accessible.
I'm thinking of, at least for Black culture, you know, my limited knowledge of it, I think of Harlem. I think of Bronzeville in Chicago, and Crenshaw should be at that same level, right?
As a
mecca, as a place. Where do you think it is right now with that?
You know, I think to the people that are in Los Angeles, it is there.
It is right. That. It's been there.
It's where the movies were shot. It's where the TV shows are based in. You know, Crenshaw is the largest intact Black community west of Chicago. So a lot of people don't actually know that until they get here and they go to Leimert or they go to Crenshaw and they're like, wow, okay, like this is here. But for people that have been here for generations, you know, this was, you know, their place. And for this project in particular, that's why the community has really been so active in it, because they understand the urgency in the moment. And creating this permanent place for Black Los Angeles to exist, not only as a memorial, because we're not creating a memorial for Black Los Angeles. We're actually documenting it, and then we're activating it.
That's right.
And that's really, you know, one of the critiques that we get a lot of times around our project is that we don't want to just put up a sign and say it was here.
Yeah.
Right. We want to put up a sign that says been here, still here.
Yeah.
And going
it's a
to
present and future tense conversation. Right.
Yes.
And
what does that mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. And so, you know, in a lot of places like, you know, the Harlems, the South Side of Chicago, the Southeast DCs, you know, how do we improve those places, but also keep those current residents in place?
Yes.
And I think that that is actually hopefully what the model that we create is.
Okay.
Is how communities, whether they're Black, Brown, Red, Green, Yellow, they can improve and also create these local kind of mechanisms to stimulate their local economy, to stimulate their residents, to educate people, and also acknowledge that new people will come. Mm-hmm. So if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, they want to be part of it, right?
They want to be part of it, and they want to learn.
Yeah,
and that learning, that education around who you are, what you want to be, that should be incentivized and also captured through business, through commerce, through the things that we already do, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that I am most happy about is creating those mechanisms to where people can actually activate those things.
How long you've been there now? How long you've been there?
Almost 2 years.
Is that like 10 years in startup years? Like startup years to human like 10 years?
It's around five.
It feels like five. It feels like five.
When I tell people I was at River LA for 8 years, they're like, wow, that's it. And it feels like 15 because of just how fast everything goes.
Yeah.
And this is the same way. I mean, we're building the construction site right now. We're in our second phase of construction. We're also doing our public art commissions. We had a lot of approvals for public art, which is amazing.
Yes.
And we're working with our small businesses. We have 43 along the corridor. We have over 100 Black women owned artists, entrepreneurs.
Wow.
That we engage with, and we're building programs around to really kind of figure out how we can kind of think about that 2.0 Crenshaw corridor. What does it look like? What does it feel like? And how do we revitalize and repair this community, you know, through our project? Mm.
What are some of the early successes that you're super, you know, that feels like momentum's happening, right? Obviously you got the construction site, but were there maybe symbolic or moments where you sort of see the brain shifting, right? The mental model shifting on it. What was that for you that you witnessed?
Well,
you
know? Yeah. So I think, so in 2020 on February 29th, we had our groundbreaking event. And this is-
I'm just thinking mentally in the big scheme of things, that's a tough time to do. That's like, you didn't know, right? You didn't know February 29th.
Exactly.
You didn't know.
So we had our groundbreaking event. We had raised all of our money for construction. We brought over 3,000 people out. We had Karis Martin on the stage. We had community vendors. And then 4 days later, we had a stay-at-home order.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, one of the things that came out of that was a complete, utter focus on our businesses along the corridor. Because we knew that if we didn't really do what we had to do with public funding, with PPP, with technical assistance, all those things to build this project and those businesses not exist because of something out of their control,
right,
would have been unacceptable.
Right.
And to make it through, quote unquote, through that moment with those businesses intact, to me, is something that I'm most proud about as the first year that I was on the project to be able to play a part in that.
You didn't plan for that either. You didn't take the job going like, we're going to do that thing, right? Which is make sure we're shepherding these orgs through the fire, you know, through the
DC through the Thrive wire. Program was a full bodied experience from writing it to issuing the grants to becoming an organization that did that work.
Yeah.
And out of that, I think it really reinvigorated the team, reinvigorated the businesses to really start truly understanding who we were again, because they were at the center of why this project started in the first place, because of the disruption through the infrastructure investment and the other challenges that they were having. So that's one moment. And then the second, you know, I think to start construction, to see a shovel in the ground, to see delivery of materials is a really big moment. And then of course the public art approval that we got from the Cultural Affairs Commission, because those are permanent sculptures by Black artists centered in the community and are going to be there forever. And to say that is happening and approved is a monumental occasion for the Crenshaw community because it is our intention to create a permanent space for them and for anyone that wants to participate in that moving forward.
So where you like, we'll talk in a year, maybe we talk in 2 years. What do you hope we're celebrating? What do you hope we're celebrating at that time?
You know, I hope we're celebrating the end of phase one of our construction, which is six pocket parks, 822 trees, public arts commissions, both permanent and 2D murals on the businesses. I hope that we've done some facade improvements for the businesses that are along the corridor as well. And really, honestly, I hope that we've engaged the community and really truly understanding that, you know, without them, this is not possible. But also our work is not done. And we've created a model for other communities like Milwaukee to say, you know what, this place that means a lot to us, that we know needs more investment, we can do that. We can come together. We can create a nonprofit. We can start a campaign. We can hire architects. We can do it. We can change the sidewalk in the way that it looks. We can make our own shade structure. We can really change our community's aesthetic for us. And we can really take control back of that, because as things change, the community in numbers is actually more powerful than that change.
Right.
Because we can actually dictate how that change looks, feels, who's involved. You can be the organization that people have to go to. Whether you want to be that organization or not, I think that that is something that I know that a lot of cities share that interest. And for me, you know, being a resident in LA 10 years now, I have two small kids. They're going to be here. And they're going to be able to experience this project as a part of their life, not knowing any other difference. And I look forward to a lot of other young kids experiencing the corridor in the same way and growing up and knowing that, yeah, we can live in a great place that looks amazing and feels great and be Black. You know, like that to me is the goal. And maybe that's the East Tennessee coming out in me, or the Brooklyn or the DC. But, you know, those places, they need to be everywhere. We need to have mini Harlems everywhere. And we're just doing our model making to make sure that folks at least have a template of how to do it.
Well, I you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about we've got a few initiatives that have been emerging in Milwaukee that I think y'all are family in the way, right? And I'm looking forward, you know, if offline actually makes some introductions, if anything, just to get inspired by you, or you also, you know, vice versa, because there's, as you may know, or may probably aware, you know, like most northern industrial towns, you know, segregation has ravaged investment in parts of neighborhoods. And so we are in an interesting moment here in Milwaukee, where I say cultural moment, where that's starting to change, right? And now to your point, I think the challenge is, how do you do that in a way so the folks that initiated the change also are the ones that continue to reap the success of that change, and so therefore it's continued, right? It's their prosperity continues overall, right? And that's the nuance, right? Because it's tough, because I think we have a lot of examples when it's not. That's a little too accessible, right? That example is a little too accessible in terms of folks cannot, and especially here in Milwaukee, if we really want artists and creatives to thrive, right? We need to make sure it's a place where they can continue to thrive and not get pushed out of and continue to be part of that.
Yeah, and honestly participate in the recovery, right? Like we're coming back from COVID right now. We're not done, right? No. And I think that, you know, one of the examples that I wanted to share was, you know, the California Creative Workforce Act, which the state passed in California, is specifically for creative artists.
No, man.
To do their work.
Wow.
To help us recover.
Yeah.
It is the Kerry James Marshall for everyone, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Do what you do, put it in our faces, and allow us to experience it to help us come out of this moment. And this is a state bill that was passed that I'm really excited about because, you know, and to get out of the depression, we actually had the WPA. We paid artists to get us out of the depression because it was just not a financial depression. It was a mental one. And I think our moment right now is very similar where we need artists, we need creatives, we need those people that have made our communities cultural to step forward and push us forward, right? And I think that it's efforts like that that are going to really change the way that our whole nation kind of coexists moving forward and how we respond to different changes in our communities. Artists lead that. You know, like the community organizers lead that. Like my job is the easiest one ever. I get out of the way. and I think that finding the right people that are able to, you know, acknowledge that that is their best role for them and then allow the people to kind of step forward to really lead it and drive it.
Well, Jason, I think you're right. I was supposed to talk to you today because one, not just for you to share your story of what's happening at Destination Crenshaw as an inspiring story for us in Milwaukee, but also just to be re-inspired in the work that you're about and the person you continue to become. It's such a pleasure to witness you and be with you. And and you're not done yet. That's what's really great. I know you're not done yet. These are early days. I
mean, it's crazy. It doesn't feel early. Having two kids, it doesn't feel like the second quarter, but that's what I've been told. But no, it's great, Mac. I really, you know, I think that, you know, people are as strong as their connections and their journeys, right? I value people that have seen me in different iterations. So I appreciate this conversation. And I always tell people here, like, I'm going to keep knowing you. So like we might as well, like, you know, try to make something happen.
I like that. It's a threat. It's like a veil. I'm gonna keep knowing. So either we work together now or don't now. It's gonna happen.
I'm gonna make you do it.
You'll find, because that's been your, as an organizer, you've all been about changing the trajectory of people's if not their afternoon or their next week, their lives overall. Jason, how can people find you? How can our audience find you if they'd like to learn more about Destination as well as the work in general?
Yeah, so we're on, we have a website, destinationcrenshaw.la. We're on Instagram at Destination Crenshaw, on Twitter, Destination Shaw. And you can see us on all those places, YouTube as well, Destination Crenshaw. We have a lot of video content that we're going to start putting up, highlighting our project, the businesses along the corridor, and really a lot of the work that we do. And then, you know, reach out, jason@destinationcrenshaw.la. That is my email. I do read it and answer it regularly. So look forward to hearing from folks, you know, on how we can engage on projects like this and other places.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to connecting to some of our projects here, and it'll be sister projects or sibling projects in terms of creating Black vibrancy and celebrating Black culture. To that end, had Jason Foster. Great to have you again, Jason.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, Lindsay and David, hope you enjoyed listening to that. Hope the listeners enjoyed listening to this conversation with Jason around placemaking, which, even though we were talking about LA and we talked some about Milwaukee, it's something that's super relevant as we're trying to make through arts and culture Milwaukee a place that is vibrant of arts and culture as well.
And I think too, Mac, that something that really came through in the interview was your personal affinity with him and how, you know, friendly you guys were. And I think that really kind of, I think, speaks to the fact that, you know, within our own personal networks, we have all these great people doing really cool things across the country. And it's really a unique opportunity for us to be able to call them in on this podcast, to be able to highlight them and even like glean some best practices.
Yeah. Excited to, you know, we're going to have, you know, Lindsay, you got to bring people from your life in
on here. That's right.
We're going to bring some of Lindsay's people on. Dave, we're going to bring your people on.
My people on?
Were you in a movie with Nick Cage? Get Nick Cage on here.
I was in a movie with Nick Cage.
Yeah. There you go.
And Lindsay, Adam Beach.
Didn't Lindsay play with Itzhak Perlman at Carnegie Hall at one time? Didn't that happen?
No.
No. Yeah, hey, David, you know also I have an affinity for?
Who, Mac?
The listeners, especially the ones that loyally listen to this solo bolo pod that I just put together with the help of you all. If you enjoy this episode and you'd like to help support the pod, share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Keep us moving up the charts. Contact us directly at a pod at imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by Lindsay Sheridan MacArthur and Tigo and David Lee. You can also listen to back episodes of Black Imagination and Arts Forward MKE. All of those can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at imagine_MKE or Facebook at imaginemke. Go to our website, sign up for the David Lee Imagine MKE newsletter, a bi-weekly newsletter about all the great stuff that's happening in Milwaukee's arts and culture scene. Thanks again, everybody, and we will catch you next Tuesday when we start talking about our incredible conference that's going to happen on November 16th. We'll see you next Tuesday.